prejudice in a small town. Many here have felt it sometime or another. For the Native community, perhaps, it has not been subtle. Fairbanks Native Association Executive Director Sam Dementev started school years ago in a small, mostly Native community.
I remember coming to Fairbanks when we came to Fairbanks and went to the public schools here. There was definitely a difference, and I could feel it, you know, being an Indian Native kid from downriver. And, you know, you could tell when you're not wanted to be on a team in a sport. Or you could tell, you know, they'd be pointing at you and laughing at you, calling you, gee, it's wintertime, you know, you're real suntanned, are you real sunburnt, you know, and just kind of making remarks that kind of hurt. When you're a kid, those remarks like that kind of hurt, and you remember those.
As the minority population increases in Fairbanks, a new generation of kids is growing up with its own memories of prejudice. Yolanda Esau recently graduated from Lathrop High School. At Lathrop, there's a part of the hallway where most of the black kids hang out and another where white kids hang out.
They expect for us to mingle, and they say when they walk down to our section, they have a hard time, which is not the well, it might be the case, but when I walk through here, I have to say, excuse me, and they will hit me on purpose with their bags. And me biting my tongue, not trying to say what they want me to be, I just excuse it and I walk through.
Alaska Native teenager Billy Couch has already shaped her opinions.
You know, I dislike some white people. I should say most white people. Because, you know, it upsets me that I can't even walk down the street and not be hollered at by a white person about my race.
Disapproval doesn't stop with skin color. For Luis Martinez and his family, English is truly a second language.
We cannot possibly talk in English. It's impossible for us because we grew up talking in Spanish. And, I mean, everywhere we go, we talk to our parents in Spanish. Spanish, Spanish, Spanish. No English. We were walking into paint table, we were having a conversation. These people, I think it was the people, this guy, he told us, he stopped us. Let's talk in English, we're in America.
We have a lot more covert racists here.
Lathrop chemistry teacher Kathy Mosley has been a part of the Fairbanks scene for a long time.
People that say one thing, I mean, they and maybe they really believed that that's how they feel, that they aren't racist. Or don't hold those opinions.
Of the three black principals in the North Star Borough School District, Yvonne Ryans was the first. In her 10 years in Fairbanks, blacks have comprised roughly 6% of the borough population. Ryans thinks she knows how the black community is seen here. It isn't.
And I happen to feel like it's the racism that currently exists is a racism by omission, in that it's left out. Multicultural people, ethnic people are left out. So it's not, if we just don't talk about the writings, if we just don't talk about the paintings, if we don't talk about any of that, or we don't present any of that that's done by any other ethnic group, then you'll never know. So the racism exists by the fact that we don't allow it to happen in the first place. And to me, that's a real crime. That is racism.
As for the kids in the school district, some see it, some don't. El Renee Fluker and Yolanda Esau.
If you go into a place looking for racism, you're going to find it. If you look for it, it's there, you know. But I wasn't looking for it, and I haven't found it yet. So, you know, it's not there.
I don't go out and expecting to find racism or anything like that. But when I was here in school, I always heard racial comments, or I noticed things that I don't know. I guess I'm always just wide open. My eyes are wide open.
For KUAC-FM, I'm Ann Thornson.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are.
kids think all black kids do is listen to music and dance a certain way. And, you know, they're like, well, I don't want to be around that. And not really looking at the person themselves.
They see downtown areas, and all they're seeing is the side of Native people that's really, you know, given up on themselves and on life, you know, and all they're surrounded, you know, it's just alcohol. And they don't see the part of us that, you know, work for a living and do the same thing, have the same everyday life as they do. Neither are you. We are
the same, whatever we do. At school, and people that don't really know me, I mean, you come up there and wetback. Where's your parents from? It all would come down to Europe. I mean, what's closer, Europe or Mexico? Who's wet, you or me? So basically comes out them being wetter than I am. So basically a wetback is just something, it's another name.
They're hippies of the 90s, I guess, the late 80s and 90s, they really are. But they have great talent, and they aren't stupid. But that's the way everybody looks at them, as being stupid, dirty-looking people.
You know, there's like the stoners, there's the preps, and there's the nerds, and then there's, you know, say there was a bunch of stoners with long hair, you know, long-haired guys, all of us, you know, partying, and then we've got the waivers over here with their hair, head shaved and everything. And some of them would walk in, and we'd automatically jump on them just because they're weird. They're different. They're other than us, which makes them outcasts.
The big thing that I noticed when I first came up here was the derogatory comments towards the Native American population. And it just really blew my mind. I was not used to, I mean, I just hear people saying, oh, them natives down, you know, there. I don't know if it was a hate or it's just a misunderstanding. But it was just such a gross generalization that just packed a whole group of people into one category. They talk about them so badly, and I just think it's terrible.
Beginning of summer, I had a light coat on, you know, and a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, and I looked like any normal person. You know, I wasn't all ragged out or anything, you know. And this guy just stopped his car in the middle of the bridge, stopped traffic, to tell me that, Nate, get a car, get a job, you know. And I'm not a Nate, I'm a Native. You know, there are Natives and Nates. You know, the Nates are people that hang on Second Avenue and drink all the time, and then there's Native people. You know, it upsets me that I'm walking along minding my own business and somebody hollers at me. They don't even know who I am. They don't know whether or not I have a job, whether or not I'm old enough to drive a car. You know? It got me. Hate me.
I have to live with these people in this world. That's why it bothers me. And they have say-so just as much as I do. And if they're not going to know my background and any other background, then how are they going to be helpful to me and society? They're going to be helpful to themselves and what they know, and that's it.
The role of schools is to teach, to prepare young people to live and work in the world. That used to mean the three R's. Today, it's more complicated. There's more on the academic side, and increasingly, schools are being asked to prepare students to understand and deal with life around them. Lathrop graduate Yolanda Esau.
They're the teachers. It's their responsibility to teach you, to make you understand so that you're not ignorant when you walk out of here to something that you've never been exposed to. Because most of the kids that leave this high school, they know nothing of different cultures. They know their own, and that's the right way, and everybody else's culture is wrong.
The executive director of the Fairbanks Native Association is Sam Dementiff. He also calls on teachers to respond to minority students' special needs.
When you're teaching and working with kids, you have to be real sensitive of who they are and what you say and what you do. It's teachers being sensitive to the different cultures and the different races of people. And those people are young kids when they're in their hands.
The school district is making an effort. Affirmative Action Officer Charles Moore says the district's growth over recent years has made it more aware of minority student needs.
We're doing some good things, but there's much room for improvement. And I think the school district realizes that in order for us to deal with prejudice and isms of any form, we have to make sure that people are educated and are provided experiences to learn new things and not be ignorant of issues. I think that what we're trying to do now is expose the Alaska Native culture to all of our students.
Denali Elementary School has a Native cultural room. Students learn about the Native way of life. And this year, Hunter School begins a program called Excellence in Indian Education. It's based on a Lower 48 model designed to help Native American students get more out of school, feel increased self-esteem, and know that the schools are there for them. And Lathrop sponsors Youth for Cultural Awareness. Kathy Mosley is the Culture Club advisor.
I guess the one thing that I try to do is when these kids come in with these kind of problems, you know, well, this person said such and such and such and such, and I don't like it. Well, let's sit down and how do we get around this, or how do we deal with this problem? Let's not just fly off the handle, because you're going to deal with this the rest of your life, because you are in a dominantly white society. So how are you going to deal with that? You know, what are you going to do? If this was your employer, what would you say back to him?
Efforts like the Culture Club have counterparts throughout the district. A conflict resolution project at Weller teaches students to mediate their problems. And innovative teachers have kids talking, thinking, and learning to examine their own thoughts and feelings, and their classmates as well. For KUAC-FM, I'm Ann Thornton.
In a country that identifies itself as the melting pot nation, young minority citizens often find themselves at sea. Cultural identity is something they feel has slipped their grasp. They want it back and have different ideas about how to recapture the music, the workways, perspectives, and values of their first people. Born and raised in Alaska, 18-year-old Luis Martinez calls himself Mexican. Spanish is his first language, but for Luis and his brothers, language is not enough.
We want to learn our dances, our culture. We want to learn more about our background. And that's basically something you cannot find in books. You have to live it.
For Billy Couch, 15, and an Alaska Native, cultural roots, though geographically close, seem further away.
In the youth, it is dying. Right now, I couldn't even tell you what is the Native culture. Wow, Native culture, all I know about my race is the language, the food, the sports, and what they do for a living. You know, what they used to do. That's all I know. The elder needs to teach. You know, they need to get off the bottle and teach the young about the culture. They need to sit down and, you know, tell them. Otherwise, they'll never know, and the Native culture will die totally and completely.
Who's responsible for cultural continuity in the melting pot nation? Minority or ethnic children? Their elders? Their teachers? Yolanda Esau says it's something students are not getting at school.
If you want to learn about different cultures, you don't do it at...
You do it yourself.
Yeah. You don't do it at this particular high school because it will not get taught to you unless you go out and do it yourself.
Some of the kids are trying to learn for themselves. Lathrop students formed a club called Youth for Cultural Awareness last year, and this year, Teacher Kathy Mosley will be its advisor.
The club tries to draw from more than just the black kids at school. We do have a few Native kids in there, and you know, everyone's always welcome. But a lot of it's just to discover what they're about, you know, to find out who they really are.
Self-discovery and the search for cultural identity are linked, says Sam Dementev of the Fairbanks Native Association. The reward for asking, who am I, is a strong self-esteem.
It's in the beginning years of our lives when we're young adults that we wonder, who are we? And then when we start looking into our family tree and our family roots and accepting who we accept who we are as a person. Then all of a sudden the self-esteem just starts boiling. I mean, it starts developing fast. You feel good about yourself. And once you get confidence, you feel better, and it radiates in a person. You can see it in their face.
Dr. Judy Kleinfeld agrees. The psychologist and researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks says that a sense of kinship with one's family and pride in one's ethnic group supports both the individual and the group and has helped the human species to thrive for thousands of years. Dr. Kleinfeld adds, it's time to debunk the myth.
The old notion of the society as a melting pot is now recognized as never true and probably not even desirable. The image is now of a mosaic, of a beautiful piece of art that has to do with lots and lots of bright and shiny pieces. I don't think we can or even should get rid of those feelings of delight and enjoyment of our own ethnic groups. And there is some secret sense that we're superior, our bunch, whatever we are, Irish or Chinese or blacks or natives or Jews, are the best folks in the world. And I think that's a healthy thing. We can think that we're the best, but other people are just fine, too.
For KUAC-FM, for the Prejudice Puzzle in Fairbanks, this is Susan McGinnis.
I'm going to break you up into groups of three or four, and I'm going to give you a piece of paper and the markers. I want you to think about personal prejudice that you have experienced in your life. Just do that in your group. And then on the sheet of paper, I want you to do two things. I want you to write up the actual experience, and then I want you to write how you felt about it.
In Beth Horikawa's classroom, kids do a lot of talking. These Monroe High School sophomores have a lot to say about prejudice. They're talking about their own prejudices, learning to recognize prejudice, and reacting to it as part of life in Fairbanks.
She thinks that black people are just dumb. She thinks they're dumb, period. She thinks they're all dumb, and that they all steal things, and that they're all bad. She just thinks that. And we go, well, you're prejudiced, and she goes, no, I'm not.
In movies, it's like black people are major druggies and like drug kingpins and all that.
And he has a good point. I know, they take the car easy. The people drive into a nice neighborhood, then they go into a black neighborhood, and they go inside a restaurant, and they come out, and their car's stripped down, hubcaps gone, tires gone, everything's gone.
And that's a good point about, in the movies, it's always the African-Americans who are portrayed as the big druggies. And what kind of image does that perpetuate?
Not a very
negative
good one.
Not a real negative.
It's me and a couple of my friends and my cousin, and he was this waiter, and he was gay, and made fun of him. Poor guy, we just thrashed on him.
How do you know he was gay?
That's what they say.
He could have been wrong. He could have been assuming that he was gay.
Were you positive he was gay?
Yeah. And I just made fun of him.
What kinds of things do they say to you? Give an example.
Doesn't it feel weird to have a mother that's black?
It's just as normal for them to be gay as it is for us to be straight. I mean, what if we were living in a gay world and we were straight? We'd feel just as stupid as they do. I mean, you know, it's just not fair. I mean, I think they should have rights just like we do.
Sometimes they're, like, misjudging them, saying they're gay because of their walk or something, or how they hold their hands or something like that.
And they're not gay. I don't like to say that black people, like, eat barbecue and have watermelon and drive Cadillacs.
All right, fried chicken. Did you say fried chicken?
Barbecue.
You didn't? Okay, and barbecue and watermelon.
A little
How much watermelon do you eat?
Well, I like watermelon and all, but I mean, it's not my everyday meal. Or
right. When girls wear glasses, it's like you're ugly or something, you know? Like, you're not pretty or something.
Some girls make fun of guys, too, that don't have glasses, believe it or not. Like, those big geeks that just have the big one like this. I thought that was prejudice right there, but... No, I'm not saying... those people, they're just huge. I mean, girls will look at them and like... No
point.
Way.
And then, you're right. No, that's
and
true.
It's not just that guys with the girls, but girls with the guys.
In this sophomore English class, Horikawa thinks it's important to get kids to talk about their experiences. The way she does it is to tell them some of her own stories.
We were mad, of course, on the personal level that they treated him like that. That it was just, it's an offense to be treated like that. And I wanted to make a scene and scream and holler, and Rodney's real mellow, and he goes, no, we won't do that. We just will never go in there again. So on a personal level, it was very hurtful, and it made us very, very angry.
I do that because it motivates the kids. I want them to know, I think my philosophy as a teacher is, I'm a human being. I hurt. I have a personal life. I don't live inside the locker during the night and then come out in the morning. And I do that because it helps them understand that just like they are, I'm a very complex person. And that creates a dynamic in the classroom. I just can't be static. I force myself on them.
They go somewhere, and so we won't go into that store anymore. And that's just the kind of thing I want you to think about.
In this English class, students are learning more than just the words and their meanings. Horikawa is also trying to teach the kids to understand what those words might mean to other people, too.
Remember, this is the African-American, whether or not we should use the term African-American. Someone else pointed out, and I'm not going to read her paper, but she said she thought that words don't have any real power or any meaning, so it doesn't matter what we call people at all. We can use any derogatory term we want, and it's how we feel inside that counts, that the word doesn't matter. How do you feel about that? That the word itself doesn't matter? That in fact, we could use the word nigger and that would be okay, because if we felt good about it inside, then somehow that person would know we didn't mean it. How do you feel about that?
If they don't mean it in the first place, why even say it? I mean, there's no call for it.
Right.
I get a lot of literary journals, and I've noticed that in my literary journals, they're starting to use the term African-American and have been using it for about a year, all of the African-American scholars in that whole community. Okay. So I'm real sensitive to that, and I've been using the word. And I use it in class, and I wanted the students to know why I'm using that word, because it sounds kind of artificial. So I had them read the article and then respond to it. How did they feel about that? Letting them know that blacks is still the except. I mean, that's the most commonly used term, and there's nothing wrong with it. But to be semantically aware of what it means and connotations behind it.
In our society, the color black always has a real negative connotation. And here we are applying that word to an entire race of people. When we've already built all these negative connotations into the word, whereas someone else pointed out that the word white, what does the word white usually mean? Pure. White means pure. And on a lot of different levels, what did Hitler call, why did he, what were the Aryan people? What was it about white people that were so special? They were?
Perfect race.
Perfect and pure, the pure race. And so those colors, if you think about it, white and black, do have connotations of good and evil, pure and unpure, dark and light. And I think that that's why this article was written. And a lot of you picked up on that. This was written by a Mexican-American. My response to this article is that it has a very good point. I'm against prejudice, and I think that African-American is better than using the term black. Black is such a dim word meaning evil and hateful things. No one deserves to be called by their color.
For KUAC-FM, I'm Ann Thornson.
European American also. I like Caucasian better because using the words black and white alone mean that whites are better than blacks, meaning that color thing again, pure versus dark, good versus evil. Everyone is created equal. I think using the heritage term...
Across the lines, who would dare to go under the bridge, over the tracks that separates whites from
bottom lights.
Because what I see in my chemistry classes is that the black kids still all sit together, and when we have a little break, they just talk among themselves. And I think the white kids sometimes look at that and say, well, geez, they're sure cliquish, and, you know, we really don't know how to break into that. But I think on the black kids' side, it's the same thing. You know, they see the same idea from the white kids. They don't want to talk to us. They don't want to do anything with us.
Lathrop High School teacher Kathy Mosley understands why kids don't cross racial lines. She sees it with her own daughter, Sean, who's a Lathrop senior this year. As a black student, Sean says it's the logical way to make friends.
They will make a black one before they would attempt to meet a white one, you know. I think it's just, you know, you've been exposed to that. You haven't, you know, been exposed to a white friend and going, well, hi, my name is this and such, and what's yours, you know. It's much easier to them to meet because they know the things to talk about.
Cultural expectations, yeah. They know what to say. They know how to say it. They know what moves to make. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's what they've been taught. Yeah. That's what they've been exposed to.
K.J. Ward, who graduated last spring, saw the lines at Lathrop High School. Black kids hang out at an end of the hallway they call the ghetto. But from the ghetto, K.J. says, it looks like the white kids segregate themselves.
The way it looks right now is, okay, all the black people, they only stick together. There's a part of the school where generally you'll find black people. Mm-hmm. But what you can't see the forest for the trees, because all you have to do is stand there and look around and the white people are on the other side of the school. Mm-hmm. But you can't see that because it's so much. Mm-hmm. All you see is a few black people in this mm-hmm. corner.
Because we're just
so right
a
there,
handful.
Black people segregate themselves. They don't want to do anything. They talk about prejudice and racism, but they're doing it themselves. They're just separating themselves.
Gymnasts hang out together. Football players hang out together. Debate kids hang out together. The stoners hang out together.
Ryan Middle School Principal Yvonne Ryans.
You hang out with who you're comfortable with to hang out with. I don't hang out with people 70 years old, nor do I hang out with 20-year-olds. I don't give the green. Why is there a problem? Why is it such a big contrast? And the only thing is I think it's a contrast and it stands out so is the color of their skin. If I took 50 white kids here and took them all black college where I went to school and put them together, they'd say, hey, those guys were all hanging out together. Does it mean they're planning the overthrow of the government or they're doing drugs? No.
We don't reach easily across racial lines because it isn't comfortable. What is comfortable is the familiar, and that's safe.
Anytime I go anywhere and I'm the minority person, I'm the only black person there, if it's a black-white situation, all the white people are sitting together and nobody, and that's okay. It's very hard to sit down next to somebody and a person get up and move away. So if I go someplace, I usually try to sit first and let them see where I'm sitting and let somebody choose to sit next to me. Because I'd be very upset if I walked in, Ann, and saw you and went to sit down next to me and you took one look at me and got up and walked away. See, my mind would tell me she doesn't want to sit next to me because I'm black.
Across the lines, who would dare to go under the bridge, over the tracks?
For KUAC-FM, I'm Susan McInnes.
I grew up with alcoholics. You know, I've lived on my own for quite a while. I've had a child, and I've just done a lot more than a 15-year-old has ever done.
Billy Jo Couch is not a typical teenager, and though she is mostly Eskimo, she doesn't consider herself a typical native either. Born and raised in Alaska, Billy doesn't have much good to say about white people. She says they show apprehension when they approach her on the street, and they speak to her very slowly, as if she won't understand.
Because they either expect you to speak a different language or be so drunk they can't understand you. Somebody that's an alcoholic or, you know, or is so much in trouble with the law that, you know, it's not funny. They've got a file as long as my arm or something.
Words and actions between white and native Fairbanksans illustrate prejudice for Billy. She sees racism and prejudice not only directed at natives, but by natives, too.
For some people, it's jealousy, you know, for some of Native people, they look at white people and they say, well, I do not like them. They're white and they've got money and I don't. And I'm Native, you know, so sometimes that makes them prejudiced. But, you know, but for some of us, it's just pure hate. They think of us as all the same. And, you know, normally what they're seeing is Second Avenue. And they don't see the rest of us. You know, it's like me, I'm 15 years old, I might not be in school, but I've got a job. And it's not in a fast food restaurant where all the other white children are. You know, it is a starting level job, but it's, you know, a starting level secretarial job. And it's just, they expect them, Native people, just to drink and bum off other people.
Billy calls herself streetwise. To her, that means what you know you didn't learn in school.
I know who to mess with and who not to mess with. I know the facts of life, you know. I'm down to reality. I'm not in school filled with this little, you know, imaginary world here. I'm a kid. I'm just going to go to school all my life. And my parents are going to pay my bills. No, that's not it.
At 14, Billy had a child of her own. Working full-time with a year-old son, Billy says she has set school aside for now.
It's like another project in my life that will get done, but not as soon as I, you know, everybody's planned. You know, because school for me is like, what's it for? All I need to really know in life is my math, my English, my language, you know, and my science. Because why do I need to know about the past?
Right now, it's more important to Billy to have a job. And she'd rather see schools teach things like that, the everyday realities that kids will face in the world outside the classroom doors.
I'd start telling them about the facts of life. About, you know, there are diseases out there you could catch. You know, there's AIDS running around, you know. And you're going to need financial, you know. You need to know about financial, what all your options are on that. You know, what help you can and can't get, you know. And you need to learn a trade. That's the biggest thing, you know, the trade and then your diseases and then what you can do to prevent them.
Learning a trade is important to Billy and her future. She says she does plan to go back to school, at least vocational school. She sees that as a key to making a living on her own. Eventually, she thinks she can be a photographer or a lawyer.
If you know both of the trades, then you're pretty much set. You know, and my mom was wanting me to go to beauty school because, you know, she just thinks I'd do good in that area. And maybe I'll try that, but, you know, until I get somewhere stable to where I can have, you know, a house and a car, you know, and not have to worry about, man, what am I going to do to pay next month's rent? You know, until I get everything set, then I'll try, you know, and broaden my horizons.
Even though she doesn't see school as important right now, Billy doesn't consider herself a dropout with no plans for the future.
Some Native kids, they just leave school and don't ever go back and don't ever do anything with themselves. But then again, there's some of us, like myself, that leave school to work or to get a trade and better themselves, but they don't need high school to do it. You know, and then there's some of us, I know, it's like my ex, he wants to go to school, he wants to finish, you know, he's got a year left, and, you know, he's a senior, you know, and then he's already got his college picked out, and he's already starting to, you know, apply for colleges and everything, because he wants to go.
Billy hopes a judge will agree to declare her an emancipated minor. She has to prove her independence before that will happen, but Billy says at 15, she's more of an adult than a child.
Not a lot of teenagers have, you know, won their case being an emancipated minor, but as much as I've been out on my own, you know, I'm a mother, and I've been out on my own for a while without a job, you know, which is harder than being out on your own with a job. And it's like, I've already, in my eyes, and most of the people I know, you know, even the elder people I know, look at me as an adult.
Billy plans to teach her year-old son Native pride. She admits she doesn't know as much as she'd like to about her own heritage, but she says there are some things she'll teach her son, and other things he'll learn himself.
I'm going to let him form his own point of view on his own, you know. I'm going to let him find out. I'm going to tell him, you know, this is what's going to happen, you know, this is what might happen. You know, you never know. There might be some people that aren't going to appreciate you because you have Native in you. But do not be, you know, do not get upset because you are Native, because it is a great thing to be.
For KUAC-FM, I'm Ian Thornton. Nearly one in four students in the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District is a member of a minority group: Black, Alaska Native, Hispanic, Asian, or Native American. Local schools try to help minority students retain cultural identity. The district also tries to address cultural differences through academics. K.J. Ward, a graduate of Lathrop, attends Dartmouth this fall. He thinks more seminar classes could help, so students can talk about their differences as students and as individuals.
People who set up the guidelines or the curriculums, you know, they shy away from that because, oh no, our kids couldn't do that. They're not used to that. But that's the point. If they don't start, they'll never get used to it. Then there's another generation that's lost. So start again. Just force it and get them talking. Get the differences aired.
KJ also wants students to read and discuss more books by minority authors. Last year, his literature classmates talked about which authors they'd drop from and add to their reading list.
I was the only Black student in that class. I would mention some of the titles or some of the authors, and I'd just be confronted with looks of like, what? Who is that? What are you talking about? We started talking a lot, and just that discussion right there opened the minds of a lot of students to, you know, oh, okay, there's more writers, you know, besides Shakespeare. Fortunately, the teacher I had exposed myself in our class to works by Black authors, by female authors, by Hispanic authors, and you would be surprised that, I mean, it's like, oh, Hispanic people write books or Black people write books? They were utterly amazed.
KJ may be exceptional. His family is military, so he's well-traveled. He gets support at home and at school in his endeavors and ambitions, but not every child is as fortunate. For many, there are invisible barriers. Principal of Ryan Middle School, Yvonne Ryans, speaks of a glass ceiling that keeps kids from higher achievement.
A glass ceiling exists for everyone at different levels. To get a student to graduate from an outstanding college and go on and achieve, you first have to get them out of kindergarten. You first have to get them through the system.
Ryan says there must also be a net for those who now fall through the cracks. She believes that attitudes about those who deserve and don't deserve help stand in the way.
Should we, in a school situation, have some tutors to help you get through school? Well, by God, no, we shouldn't, because when I was in school, I struggled and my parents helped me and I got it on my own. And so therefore, why should any particular group have a tutor to get through school? Oh, okay. But then we have kids that want to be mathematicians or scientists, and the whole country says we have to help these kids do more so that we will have better and that we will be in the race by the year 2000. We will have this, that, and the other thing. That's totally acceptable. But if we choose to tutor you because you are a deficit or we need to remediate you and you fall into a particular ethnic group, then that may be helping someone that doesn't, quote, deserve to be helped, but we will help those kids that are already on top. We help those children get further on top. So I have a real, real concern, a real issue as to how that racism looks. And it does not have to be a Klansperson with a cross burning on my yard.
Lathrop High School is trying to help minority students get a leg up. Among academic innovations, a special math and science program targets freshman minority students. They'll have extra math classes this year and a science class that's tied into the math work. Teachers hope it will better prepare minority students for college. Lathrop chemistry teacher Kathy Mosley thinks it will at least put them in the running.
One of the reasons we started it was that we looked around, the math teachers and science teachers looked around and there aren't any people of color in our higher math and science classes. I mean, they're just... So we're doing something wrong someplace, because these kids come in, you know, ready to take science and math, but someplace along the line we were losing them.
Local high schools and even middle schools are losing minority students. How many isn't clear. Next week, student dropout rates will be released. The school district has been relying on statistics compiled in 1986, the latest available. They show a 14% dropout rate. 15-year-old Billy Couch is a statistic. She left school, has a 13-month-old child, and a job. She says she'll get back to school eventually and thinks one day she'd like to study law or photography. But for now, Billy doesn't see the point of staying in school.
In the world, man, you don't need to know about, you know, Hitler and all that. Or, you know, oh, yay, Abraham Lincoln swam this lake over here, yippee. But you need to know, hey, you're going to have a job. You know, you have to pay your own bills. You know, school's not going to teach you what drug to and don't take, you know, how much you can take that before it'll kill you.
Billy may get back to school, or she may not. Someone or something will have to convince her that what she can learn there is relevant to her life and could help her prepare for a career. In 1990, at 15, Billy doesn't see it. For KUAC-FM, I'm Ann Thornton.
Tanisha, you forgot the hall pass.
This is Walkie Charles' third grade class at Hunter Elementary School. If all goes well, these will also be the graduating high school students in the year 2000. Looking around the room, you can see children here from almost every racial background, and they all seem to get along. This is one of the interesting things about Hunter Elementary, its demographics. At Hunter, whites comprise only 49% of the student body. The majority of the students come from other racial backgrounds. Between 25 and 30% of the students are Native American. Another 18% are African American, with Hispanic and Asian students rounding things out. Principal Roger Griffin believes Hunter's racial makeup prepares his students for the future.
We represent what students will grow up facing in their real life situation. They're going to be exposed to a society that has that kind of a demographic description, that 50% of who you come in contact with are going to be ethnically different than you. I think that we need to teach students that respecting differences, including ethnic differences, is a real important life skill.
In order to hone that skill in his students, Roger and five of his teachers took part in a workshop this summer sponsored by the Institute for Excellence in Indian Education. Held in Washington State, the workshop specifically addressed the needs and problems of Native American students. For 6 days, the participants from throughout the Pacific Northwest shared information and brainstormed strategies on how to be more effective as educators. According to Griffin, the question of prejudice was constantly raised, and not just the prejudice of students. Teachers and administrators were forced to examine their own assumptions.
Floyd Pepper was one of our speakers, and Floyd spent 2 days talking about the expectations, and she modeled, she created or relived situations where she made mistakes herself in her career as a Native educator and an outstanding educator, I would add. But she modeled routines where she had said something to a child that inadvertently leveled a lower expectation, either academic or behavioral. Our expectations need to be at an honest high level for these students, whether they are Native, whether they are white, whether they are Black, whether they're Hispanic, whether they're Asian. Regardless of who they are, the expectation needs to be at a high level.
But the techniques learned at the workshop aim to break down more than racial barriers, says Griffin. Children who are categorized as slow learners suffer from a subtle but powerful segregation all their own. Traditionally, these children with learning handicaps were pulled out, that is, separated from the class for special treatment. That's changing here in Fairbanks. The school district has adopted a new approach. New techniques are being used to make students feel a part of the whole. The borough hopes to have these approaches integrated in the curricula within 5 years. One approach, called cooperative learning, has students helping those at lower levels. In essence, they share what they know. learning specialists now enter the classroom to instruct students instead of removing them. And a reading program called Whole Language is being introduced that provides every student in a class with one reading series, no matter what their level. What Roger Griffin and the other teachers got at the Institute this summer was an affirmation that these and other techniques being used in Fairbanks are appropriate. Walkie Charles was one of those teachers from Hunter, and he's excited about applying these approaches.
Things are looking good. In fact, the first thing that I did at the beginning of this year was cooperative learning, and my kids were saying, but that's cheating, Mr. Charles. I said, no, it's not, because we're here, we're going to learn from each other. You're going to share what you know to others who don't, and we're all going to be happy because we're going to get things done. And the only time that we're not going to be sharing all this is during the time that we're going to have, you know, an evaluation or a test. It's okay. I was told when I was a kid that if you talk with another during the time that you're supposed to be doing your spelling, you're cheating. Uh-oh, no more. No way. And it's great. The kids feel good. I feel good. I don't have any headaches because we're all working together.
The other side of the coin to being a part of a team, educators say, is also having a strongly developed sense of self and cultural identity. Roger Griffin agrees and says building student self-esteem was a big topic this summer at the workshop.
I think most educators recognize as a very key component, and that is developing student self-esteem. And we spent time talking about developing or doing activities and using those as tools to help develop respect for differences.
But perhaps more effective than any theory or program in education towards developing a happy, productive student is for kids to have someone they can look up to, in essence, a role model. Walkie Charles, who is a Yupik Eskimo, seems to understand this when he explains why he's at Hunter.
There's times when I feel, what am I doing? Why am I here? And yet, at the same time, I look and I think, well, I'm at Hunter School. I'm needed here. And there's kids of all different races, all different sizes, all different, you know, backgrounds, different abilities, who want me here. That's why I'm here. And that's when I forget myself. That's when I forget my own identity, and I come to school as a teacher who is going to make a difference in the school, in my classroom, and those who have left my classroom are going to turn around and say, yep, it was Mr. Charles who did it for me.
For the Prejudice Puzzle in Fairbanks and KUAC Local News, I'm Robert Hannon.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful?
I've run into a lot of people that have the stereotype that Native people are thieves. And we're not. You know, I had one lady come up to me to ask me where a hotel was, and she had a hold to her purse like it was going to get up and run away from her. It upsets me that they could think that about someone they don't know.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole?
You feel like you're being watched by your shoplifting. If you're shoplifting, you're being watched. And you just come in there just to pick up a blouse. And they feel, you know, you feel like you're being watched.
So, how could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
I mean, either somebody else came here before us and put a bad name to the Mexican thing, or people just have this mental thing about Mexicans being thieves.
How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
You can feel that rejection. I think that follows through a person's life. From that, your self-esteem, you know, and I didn't know this back then. Of course, none of us knew it back then, I don't think, but your self-esteem which is just starting to grow in you, is knocked down real quick when someone calls you a salmon cruncher or something like that, and your self-esteem just disappears, and you feel worthless. And from it, I think you see people today, they're suffering through alcoholism and or drug abuse, or have a real low self-esteem. It's a result of that those name callings when you're a kid that just you keep inside of you, and you're never really developing the self-esteem that we all should be developing.
Tell you, you were anything less than beautiful. How could anyone ever tell you, you were less than whole?
There's schemos and mucks. This one tourist walked up to me, "Are you schemo?" I said, "No, I'm not a schemo, lady. I'm Eskimo, you know." But like with my grandparents, my grandmother, you know, it's a cute name for her to call the children schemos, you know, because they're cute little kids. But when a white person comes up to me and calls me that, it offends me, you know. And now if it was another native person calling a child that, you know, it's natural.
How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you, you were anything less than beautiful?
I remember walking down the road there, and a couple of young guys that were walked down the road spotted me over walking on the side of the road, started throwing rocks at me. I couldn't understand why they were doing that. But then they started calling me names. And then I understood what they were, you know, they just didn't like me because I was a native kid. And I was scared stiff because the guys were throwing rocks. And they, you know, I could have really got hurt. And they didn't let up. And I had to keep dodging the rocks, and I was trying to run away, but they were between me and my home. So my house was behind them, and my mom was there, and I was a kid, you know, and trying to get back to home. And I still remember that, and we're friends now, but I still remember that incident.
How could anyone ever tell you, you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you, you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you, you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you, you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
I was out this summer, and from San Diego to Atlanta to Mobile and back.
Charles Moore works for the school district. He pays close attention to what happens outside.
I tested the West Coast and the East Coast and the South. And I read about what was happening. I talked to people. The youth are heading toward a new form of racism, I guess. In some ways, some of the groups, not on a large scale, but some, a whole lot more violent than the Klan was in my era.
To Moore, things seem better in Fairbanks, neither so angry nor so violent. Teacher Kathy Mosley agrees that what is going on outside is more volatile.
You know, if I was going to make a prediction, I could say that we were going to redo the 60s all over again soon. And things are happening. You know, racial injustice and racial murder are on the rise. I mean, those incidents are out there, and anytime your economy, the poorer your economy is, the more you need to blame it on somebody. And it's easier to blame it on somebody who's very visible. You know, and black skin does make you visible.
Standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion.
The nation may come to a boiling point. What will happen in Fairbanks remains to be seen. Prejudice is different here than in an inner city. Educator Yvonne Ryan says, in its own way, it may be just as hard to deal with.
Blatant racism, when you turn dogs loose on people, or in South Africa, you turn nightsticks and weapons loose on people, many, many people respond in horror. If you let people starve, if you torture them, many, many people respond in horror. And eventually, it will stop. And I say eventually because if you look at Mandela's case, you know how many years it took for him to even be released, okay? So eventually it stops, or the civil rights movement, or whatever. But if it is an omission, or if it's a subversive type, it's like a fog that you see, or somebody sees, and it dissipates, and then it rolls in, and then it dissipates. So how do you respond? How do you act in that fog at that time? As opposed to, well, this is going to be this way forever. Oh, we've got to do something about it. But it's here today and not there, or it becomes an issue because it kind of dissipates, but then in right conditions, it comes back. And then it dissipates, and then it comes back. And it just, Sandburg's poem about fog comes in on little cat feet. I'm sure that you can remember that. And I think of racism kind of responds like that. It kind of comes in similar to a fog. It rolls in and rolls out.
Billy Couch, a teen whose roots are Eskimo and Cherokee, told us that to her, there's not much difference between people, just skin color and your attitude. Fairbanks Native Association's Sam Dementev says those attitudes aren't easy to change.
It's a constant thing. It's just like, I guess, just like rain, you know. You have to have rain. I mean, it rains all the time. I mean, it doesn't rain all the time, but it rains, and there's the rain cycle. You can try to change a person's attitude, but you have to keep at it because they can fall back. Or if you do change a person's attitude, they're okay. They understand. But then there's always new people coming in that have been taught through experience, or just taught through seeing it in the movies, or taught through their own life experience that prejudice, they are taught prejudice, and they don't like the person in now because they're black, or because they're Indian, or they're Oriental, or they're of a certain type of European culture, or whatever it is. And then you have to continue to try to teach them about awareness, you know, and so it's a constant thing. You can't make them all, everybody well, you know, so we're all nice, wholesome people. There's always new people growing up, and there's always prejudice there. But I think that's something we all have to do. We have to continually try to make people knowledgeable about the prejudice and what it does to people, regardless of whoever they are.
For the young people, there's anger and resentment. It may not fuel a revolution, but they feel the effects and don't see solutions. Monroe Sr., Luis Martinez.
Nothing's going to stop. I mean, revenge is going to just end up in revenge and revenge, you know. So basically what you do is just either ignore it or look at the real thing.
And Billy Couch.
Against the Native and white people, it's just like a little war, except we don't kill other people. You know, it is. If somebody was to come up and say, hey, you're not supposed to do that, you're supposed to love that person over there, I'd say, hey, man, become the president and stop the war. If you can do that, then I'll tell that person over there that I love them even though I don't know them. Prejudice will always be there no matter what, no matter who tries to change what. Nobody can change somebody's feelings unless that person wants to. And a lot of people aren't going to want to because they know somewhere or another, they're going to end up getting cut down by somebody again, and then it's just going to start all over again.
Crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines.
Our thanks to those who agreed to be interviewed for this series. Join NPR tomorrow for a 2-hour national call-in airing live between 11 and 1 p.m. Saturday, and then tune in KUAC at 104.7 FM for Conversations this Sunday at noon. We'll take a final look at the prejudice puzzle. For KUAC, I'm Susan McInnes.
Take what's there. Don't you know